I'm Chris Mosier.
And this is Monster of the Week, the creepy but necessary podcast where me and Chris talk about every single episode of the TV show Supernatural, except we ran out of those, so now we're doing the prequel. CW's The Winchesters, brought to you by a bunch of people from Supernatural. So,
yeah.
Hey, Chris, how are you today?
Hey, Jeremy, how are you?
we both said in the outtakes that we're feeling a bit Eeyore.
Yeah.
And I want to take a moment, and I didn't warn you about this, so apologies in advance. This is normally when we would plug our Patreon, but instead of doing that, I want to mention we had a listener. I found out we had a listener and a Patreon supporter that apparently we got news today that she passed away a couple of months ago. It was at @meta_castiel or Dags. I didn't talk a lot to Dags. We communicated on Twitter a bunch of times about podcast stuff and about, you know, Supernatural stuff. She was a member of our Discord. I remember her chatting various times over there. But we weren't like close or special friends or anything. But it really hit me like surprisingly hard. And I've been going through my own weird vulnerability stage, it feels like, for the last month or so. But I wanted to mention it specifically because it's real easy to brush off your internet friends or your fandom friends as like, oh, they're not my real people or whatever. And I think maybe other people in people's life can do that too. They're like, oh, those aren't your real friends. Those are just your internet friends. And even us to a certain extent, like, you know, we call them our pocket friends on our Discord server as a term of affection, but it's like, it's a distinguishing between actual friends. And I just wanted to take a moment to say, like, these people that you share your time with and that you share your passion with and you share your fandoms with, they're your real life friends. Those are people who have your back, and you should reach out and hug them and tell them that you love them.
Yeah.
if you feel that way, because all of a sudden they could just disappear. So rest in peace, Dags.
And rest in peace.
I hope you and your friends I don't know what I'm trying to say here, Chris. You need to dig me out of this. This is getting
You know
weird.
What I'll say? So the other day, I used to post on Instagram. This is taking a turn, but I used to post on Instagram every single day. I would post all my collection stuff, my video game stuff on there. And I had a lot of followers and a lot of friends on there, and that was my big active social media. I checked, and I hadn't posted since 2021, so 2 years ago. I haven't posted since then. And the other day, when Final Fantasy 16 came out, I just made a post. I said, hey, everybody, hope you're doing well. Hope you're enjoying the game, blah, blah, blah. That was it. I had dozens of people reaching out to me, being like, oh my god, you're still alive, blah, 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 hope you're doing well. And it was just so easy for me to be like, oh, Instagram is annoying, I'm going to let this go. And I never thought about all these people who I used to talk to on a regular basis, even though it was just probably commenting on somebody, like a picture of somebody's, you know, whatever that they just bought. You know, it was very simple stuff. But then you realize, like, it might be the tiniest thing, but you can leave a hole in somebody's life when you step away like that. So, you know, check on each other. Stay in touch. Your friends are your friends no matter where they are. So just remember that.
Yes, absolutely. Just remember that. And on that note, Chris, do you want to remind us what's been happening on the Winchesters so far?
Last time on the Winchesters, the team, I don't know. What, do I have a name for them? Am I calling them the gang? The team? I don't know.
I like the gang because I think they're all Scooby-coded. So I call them the gang.
Definitely. They are Scooby-coded. You're right. The gang followed a lead on... Okay, last time on the Winchesters, the gang followed a lead on Jin attacks. But when the Jin in question turned out to be Ada's son, things got complicated. The gang soon discovered that the Akrita were the ones truly responsible. And it seems the strange monsters are manipulating the hunters as they seek greater control. This is a very messy road so far. Meanwhile, Mary faced her childhood trauma, and fraught flirtations between her and John continued. Whew, not my finest work.
We are covering the Winchesters, season 1, episode 6, Art of Dying. Call for help. Mary gets a phone call from an old family friend who's looking for some help, but when the team arrives, they learn that some crucial details were left out. While Latika struggles with being a hunter and questions her future with it, John's eagerness and commitment to the hunt, which CW has capitalized in this description, which is really weird, commitment to the hunt worries Mary. Carlos finds himself in a situation he's never experienced before and doesn't know what to do with himself. This was directed by Geary McLeod and written by Jess Cardost and aired on 11/22/22. Getting right into it, we start off in Elk Falls, Kansas.
I'm so sick of taking down details like that don't matter.
Who is running through the forest. She falls. She hurts her ankle. She gets back up, obviously being chased. Now she's struggling to run. She finally finds a barn, runs in, locks the door, immediately starts about to scribble some sort of sigil on the wall or something. But... doesn't happen.
Hunter stuff. It's hunter stuff.
Doing some hunter stuff. She hears some weird noises. Lights start flickering. She grabs her knife. She looks around. All of a sudden, she's jerked to the ceiling, and a gush of blood falls immediately out of her body onto the floor. Pretty gruesome kill, Chris. How do you feel about this?
We're starting off with a brutal one. This is what cold opens are all about, you know, literally dropping us into the middle of a chase, ending with a very gruesome death. That's the bread and butter of cold opens.
We have our intro, and then we go to Lata, who is meditating, and we have once again Dean Winchester's voice comes over and says, has some narration. He talks about being a hunter changing people. And it ends with, like, who's really the monster? Is it them or is it me? And it's so funny to me, and I can't wait till we continue to watch these episodes and we get to the end of this, because I think you're going to have as much fun with this as I am throughout this season, or as I have. It's becoming very apparent the more you watch these episodes, I think, that this is, like, Jensen's, like, fix-it fic, almost. Mm. This is like he's going back and like really underlining all of the stuff that he really feels and cares about in Supernatural. And this like narration is kind of a hint to the themes of the episode.
Yeah.
And it's just really, really funny that it starts with like, who's the monster, them or me? Because you and I have talked a lot about Sam and Dean talking a lot about who's the real monster. We don't hunt monsters. We hunt evil. Am I bad if I'm a monster? Like, we've had so many of these conversations. And just the idea that we're going to start it again is just very funny to me.
Yeah, we're back at it again. You can't escape. It you can't escape it in this kind of fiction, and you can't escape it in Supernatural, and it's here. But it is, I mean, it does fall in line with everything that we're dealing with here.
Yep, absolutely. Lata's meditation is interrupted by an argument between John and Carlos. John is very eagerly wanting to go back to the quarry to look for evidence for the Akrita, while Carlos is like, dude, like, the last time we tried to do that, you almost broke my van, and like, there's nothing out there. And Carlos and Lata are both like, John, you need to kind of mellow out a little bit. Like, why don't you go back to therapy? And Lata's like, you could come meditate with me. And he's like, but what about the end of the world? What about the end of the world, guys? Yeah. And yeah, he's a little intense right now.
He's going full John Winchester on him.
Yes.
The intense, it feels like he's definitely had his moments throughout it. This episode, they're really doubling down on John Winchester. And I say scary as a compliment. It's scary how much he reflects the John that we kind of know, the John that Sam and Dean talked about. We've seen so much of good guy John throughout this series that even, you know, going into it, we weren't interested in seeing, you know, this relationship or whatever, but because of the actors and the way that the characters are written, I think we've really been drawn into this story. And John has been like a real good guy for most of that. You know, you really wanted to root for him and see him get over his issues. And that's still the case now, but you are really seeing that fucking darkness and those problems that he's not addressing. You really see those coming to the forefront here.
Yeah. And it's insane to me that we're 6 episodes into the season and we're dealing with young John Winchester's anger problems. Like, at the end of this episode, he actively seeks out help for his anger issues, which doesn't seem anything like the John Winchester that we know from the main series. Like, it's so fucking bonkers to me. Mary interrupts this, like, basically coming out of her room, being like, is everything okay out of here? And then notices that Carlos is wearing her robe. Carlos says, oh, I like to think of it as our robe.
Yeah. Which is, Carlos has a lot of great one-liners in this, and then is forced to remain entirely silent for part of the episode.
That's when the phone starts ringing, except it's not the house line, it's the hunter line, or as Carlos calls
it, that it's a bat phone. It was always the old cell phone in the glove box in the car that would ring, and here it's somehow an older telephone in an older box.
It's
somewhere
like,
it's the same thing,
rotary dial phone in like a weird like phone cubby. So very funny. This is Tracy, a hunter that was a friend that hunted with Mary's mom and has since retired, and she has found a dead body in her barn, which of course we saw the body get dead.
We know about that body. I wrote down, yes. I know.
The
I knew
open.
About this.
Can't believe they brought that back so quickly. John is shocked. Why? I had no idea you could retire from this. You guys thought it was super rare, like you told me. And Carlos is like, well, I might have, you know, exaggerated a little bit. And Mary's like, yeah, it's pretty rare. But you know, it does happen. And when she did it, it sort of inspired me to think that I could do it as well.
This scene started making me think about some of the, maybe issues isn't the right word, but issues that I had with Supernatural, where, and you kind of underlined it with the CW capitalized the word hunt, where there is so much of this like self-importance almost. Like they've made like you are a capital H hunter. You are not just a person in circumstances that have led you down this path. You are a hunter. There is a certain lifestyle. There is a code of conduct. It's like all these things. And then they talk about how all these very young people are sitting here talking about how you just, oh, getting out of the life is so hard. Where it's like John already went to the military and got out of that life. That seems like a bigger commitment. And I know it's because, you know, once you go down this road, you know, there's always that, you know, that thing lurking in the dark right around the corner. But the way that they've like aggrandized this stuff, I think for me, it has made the world smaller and it has made Sam and Dean feel a lot less special. And maybe that's the point. Maybe it's to make it seem like they are less special. But when I originally watched that show, that was part of the appeal, was like these two special dudes, you know, they're on the road, they're doing this thing because their lives were so strange and they were brought up in the specific way that they've ended up this way and they've been able to accomplish great things and there's divine intervention and all this stuff. But now you're just a capital H hunter and getting out of the life is nearly impossible. What do you mean? What if I just fucking quit? What if I'm just done ghost busting and I just fucking, all right, I'm going to stop now.
Don't hunt monsters anymore.
I'm going to get an apartment in the city
and we're
and I'm going to live my life.
We're jumping ahead. I have two things to say about this. One is that, like, it's hilarious to me that, like, one of the reasons that hunters can't retire is because, like, Dean has said this, I think, a couple of times, where, like, well, there's still monsters out there. Like, and if I let those monsters live, then I'm on the line for those, what those monsters kill. And I'm like, I just want to be like, firefighters, like, when they retire, they don't just, like, fight fire forever.
They're not fucking looking out their window at night, be like, every fire burning out there. that's on me.
That's my responsibility. I have to go fight that fire. And their wife is like, you're 82 years old. Yes. They have banned you from the precinct for this behavior. You need to stop.
And it's different. It's different where Sam and Dean, they saved a lot of people, but they caused a lot of problems. like they're 50-50 really. So for them, I get it. They couldn't just walk away because they knew they were responsible. They were at the center of so many things. They had to keep fighting. Even Mary, I understand, because her whole family is this. And that's like walking away from your family. That's essentially really what I think is holding her back here. It's not just hunting. It's her family that's holding her back. But there's so many other people where you could be like, why are we being so dramatic about this?
It's and I guess this is the other thing that I want to talk about, and this is skipping to the end a little bit, but at the end of this episode, Tracy realizes, because of the some of the things she has done in her past as a hunter, that she needs to make up for that. And so she says she's going to start by, like, finishing out Darla, who is our victim in this episode, her hunt for the vampires, or the werewolves that she was on. And Mary is like, oh my god, are you serious? Like, you're going to go back to hunting? Is that the lesson? Like, And Tracy says, no, the lesson is, like, you can get out of the life, but, like, the decisions you made in the life, you still have to live with.
Yeah, and I think that's a good kind of answer to the question, I guess, we're posing, right?
Yeah, that's what Sam and Dean, I don't think ever, like, it never crystallized for me in the actual main show, but that is the issue Sam and Dean always had, is that they kept making so many bad decisions during their experience as hunters that even, you know, I mean, after the fact, anytime either one of them ever tried to go have a life, those decisions kept following them, whether they were ghosts or, you know, angels or, you know, blurry wives or whatever the case may have been. Like, they still had to deal with problems, so...
And I'm cool with that. I am cool with, you know, people in high stress situations dealing with things beyond normal understanding, and you got to make a lot of tough decisions. And those are the things that stick with you, right? That makes total sense. But yeah, the capital H of the hunt, that's what I don't like. Where it's like, I have a 9-to-5 job and it's that I'm a hunter and I have to follow these rules and regulations, and every single hunter dresses like this. Every single hunter does the same funeral ritual. Those are the little things where I'm like, you're just kind of narrowing the scope of your world when you really focus on those things. And I get it. It's just like, this is the life. This is hunting. It is bigger than it was at the beginning of the series. It's become a thing. It is a capital H hunter. It's no longer just a thing that some guy does, you know? And I still struggle with that a little bit because I don't like the idea of them being like the Jedi Order of people of flannel wearing truckers, you know? It feels a little strange.
Yeah, absolutely. And it feels weird to do that as a prequel as well. Not to get like completely derailed on this episode right at the beginning, but like
I don't think it's bad. I just think it's a little. I do think it's bad. I just don't like it. That's not how I would have done it. And I could easily see the traditions that John taught to Sam and Dean coming from Mary. Be like, well, this is how my family does it. John learns everything from her, so that makes sense. But they continue to be like, they kind of fan it out. Like, oh no, all hunters operate under these unwritten rules. And that's what always is just weird to me. Where when Sam and Dean ran into Gordon in season two, Gordon was like, the way he operated was so different from the way that they operated, especially when he started hunting Sam. But he was like, you know, setting up booby traps, and he had like a sniper on a roof. Like, you know, stuff was intense. And he also only hunted vampires. He didn't feel like the trope of the hunter. He was his own guy doing his own thing, and that's what made him so interesting. But now we make every hunter the exact same person, carrying the exact same weight. And that's just, yeah, kind of a bummer.
The, what was I about to say? It just completely went away as you were talking. That's such a bummer. It doesn't matter. Oh, I was going to say, like, I would have expected, I don't think that I would mind, like, the shrinking of the world stuff so much if it was in the sequel to the Supernatural thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if the legend of Sam and Dean became kind of codified, and, like, all of a sudden people were, like, attributing them saving the world so many times to them making all the right decisions and trying to emulate them, so then all of a sudden, like, every hunter wears flannel because it's a what am I talking, it's like a
sign that, like, hey,
it's an homage. I'm wearing, that's flannel, what I was looking for. Yeah.
And I'm carrying a knife, and I'm doing this, then you can start to put the pieces, you know, it's the little simple things, they all add up to one big picture. And it sort of reduces the value of, like, people like Bobby when we realize that the hunter network, they felt like he was literally at the center of, because he was the one guy that everybody could call, and he was the one who was connecting everybody. But now you just think, like, no, everybody was already connected, it seems like. Everybody knows everybody. We should probably get back to the episode.
They arrive at Tracy's place, which is a nice house in the country that Carlos thinks they could grow a lot of weed at. Tracy has a nickname for Mary. It's Cricket, which is very cute. And as they meet Tracy and introductions are made, Mary says, of course, she's sorry about Darla. We found out, I think, a little bit that the cold open victim, Darla, is part of, like, a hunter's group with Tracy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of other guys in that group. And Tracy's obviously a little upset, but she basically says the thing that we've been talking about. That's the life of a hunter. Kill or be killed. She wasn't really able to do anything with the body. It's been a long time since she's seen one, so she just kind of left it in the barn for our Scooby gang to go and look at.
Oh, okay, cool.
Thanks. It took us 17 hours to drive here. This is not weird at all.
That thing is, it's hot. It's hot here.
They go to look at the body.
We got AC in that barn.
I wanna call attention to Lotta's like crocheted hair. Hat thing, just because it's incredibly cute and it looks homemade, and I don't know, like, I just, the wardrobe choices in all of these episodes are great. Like, I feel like there's a podcast out there that could be just dedicated to talking about Carlos's outfits throughout this entire
season. It's you know, they have remained consistently a well-dressed group. I think John is the only one who's boring, but he's like boring and like he looks good and he fits in well, you know, because everybody kind of contrasts against him. Even Mary is still like kind of stylish. Said what did I say she had last time? Her riz or whatever.
Oh yeah, but you meant drip. I think you were talking
yeah,
about
better drip.
She,
yeah. No, but I just think I they all look like a really good unit, and I've said this I think on an older episode, but just the when you can put characters next to each other like that and make them just like look good as like an ensemble, that's you know, it's not always easy to nail, and they really nailed it with this cast.
Yeah. There's a lot of chit chat here. Mary says that this has obviously been really difficult for Tracy, and she can't wait for the time that a dead body shakes her up that much. Like, she's been so long away from it. It's a weird thing to wish, but
that's
there you
such
go.
A fucked up thing. Like, man, I can't wait until this bothers me.
Meanwhile, Carlos finds a claw upstairs, and they kind of from the beginning thought this is a werewolf, but Lotta's like, no, this is definitely not a werewolf. But before we can really deal with what this is, we have to go through an extremely emotional hunter's pyre.
And this is, again, I was kind of like going off in my notes about, like, I don't like that this is a standardized thing that everyone does. It's literally, now that I said the word out loud, it just makes me think of this is the Jedi Order, and this is the way that they do things.
Sure.
And maybe to somebody that's the idea, you know, and that's cool. For me, I guess I just don't love that. But I will say, Joan of Arc, this is a Leonard Cohen song. This version is way better than the Leonard Cohen version. Really, really like this. It worked. And you can see John throughout this thinking about having to do this for Mary. That's what I was reading.
Yeah, which he's going to bring up later. So you're absolutely right. This really, I think it was mostly the song, but this really got me. I was kind of into this. Just, I think it was the combination of the song and they very carefully like clean Darla's wounds to like, I guess, get her you know, looking right for the Lord. And it's very emotional. And then I do believe like the pyre stuff, just as one counterpoint to your opinion on this, like there is like a mechanical reason for this, right?
Absolutely.
Like, yeah,
absolutely.
This is specifically so that they don't get like repossessed or reincarnated or whatever.
And if you just put them on like the ground, then you're going to cause a fire, you know? Like, yeah, so there is absolutely a mechanical use for every step that they take during this. So you got me on that one, but I will say the other thing I noticed in this where the actor who plays John Drake something.
Yes, Drake something.
It's escaped me, but Drake Roger, I felt like in this name. Scene, even not saying anything, was giving me Jeffrey Dean Morgan vibes big time.
Yeah,
like he was capturing that same like. I hate the quiet intensity. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like when John's not saying anything, but you can tell he's a fucked up guy.
Yeah.
That's what I was getting from this scene.
He looks very, very angry and very, very intense throughout all of this. And like Mary is having, you could tell because like Mary is constantly looking at him and like worrying about him, right? Yeah. Like she is obviously very concerned about this dude.
She's like, oh no, that's a fucked up guy, definitely.
I will say that sometimes this show's budget definitely shows it's like, or the lack of budget, I should say, shows up because when they back away from the pyre as it starts going up, it's very clearly green screened, and then like it's obvious they just didn't set anything on fire because the lighting on their faces don't look good. And I'm like, yo, Supernatural did these pyres, like
grim work, dude. Supernatural did grim work.
Did some grim work and made it look grim.
Sandwiches are warming his hands over the burning corpse of a Nazi.
You guys look like you're getting ready to record a TikTok. Like that's all I'm saying. Like what are we doing? Later, the gang is hitting the lore books, and Tracy brings them some drinks. Lata asks if she can look at Tracy's lore stuff, and she's like, no, I got rid of all those. All I have left are encyclopedias and Harlequin novels. And Carlos is like, be into the Harlequin novels? Yeah. Meanwhile, John has an idea / suggestion. What if this monster, another weird, rare monster that they can't figure out what it is yet, has been attracted here by the Akrita? For the same thing, but via these radio towers that they're trying to research, right? Like, what if they capture this monster and then use it to trap one of the Akrita? And Mary is like, yeah, that's, I mean, cool, but we have no idea how to kill the Akrita. They're giant bug guys, as far as we know. Like, we're very out of our depth there. And he's like, no, we gotta do it now. We gotta do it right now. He's just very intense.
He's really got, you know, he's got dust in all his pockets and his eyes on the prize. But he's forgetting like the four other steps that need to go in between, you know, killing the thing and finding the thing. You know, there's a lot that goes into this. And he's not really seeing all of that. So everybody's like, can we please fucking pipe down? He thinks they're doing nothing because they're not actively stabbing the Akrita.
Exactly.
And he doesn't realize that there's 1,000 layers to this and so many things that they need to do.
And we're going to get into some of those layers because Lata says she has a local friend that could potentially help them identify this monster. So her and Carlos take off. Carlos is hoping there's a bar nearby because all this clean living is starting to make me feel dirty, which is something that I can very much appreciate.
Yeah, for sure.
In the vehicle, Lata kind of talks about what you just mentioned, these kind of middle steps of being a hunter, by asking Carlos if he thinks she's a liability. Like, she's great.
Carlos, do you think I suck?
Do you think that I'm a lame? Do you think that I am not actually a person? Like, what? It's my brother.
Carlos is like, what? This is escalating, Lana.
She said she's good at the lore and the science, but not so much at the, you know, capital H hunting part. And asked the question, like, how do you be a pacifist and a hunter? Seeing Darla reminded me what happens when you can't punch back. And
that's,
I think,
a good
it's
line.
Real easy to overlook the fact that she's a pacifist. Like, I think they mentioned that in the first episode, and it's been a little bit since we've recorded on some of those first episodes, so I don't remember how much they go into depth. I feel like this is the first one that we really like.
Yeah, I vaguely do remember her saying that, but it was sort of in a, like, I don't like fighting. Like, not in, like, a hard-line world stance. Which it actually seems like that is sort of her vibe here.
Yeah.
She's actively choosing not to. Not just that she doesn't like it, or she stays away from it, or she's scared of it. She actively chooses not to go down that path.
Carlos, you know, says no, absolutely not. Like, you're not a liability, but you could tell she's not necessarily convinced yet. They arrive at the Needle and Bone Taxidermy Shop. I don't know why I wrote down Needle and Bone Taxidermy Shop. I just, Needle and Bone tickled me for some reason. And they are there to meet Anton. As they walk in, Carlos makes a Norman Bates reference because of all of the stuffed animals. And then when he sees Anton, who's a very attractive man, he says, I love Psycho.
Call him what he is, Jeremy. A hunk.
He's a hunk. He's a very attractive hunk. And Carlos... It's interesting what they do with Carlos in this episode, who just becomes absolutely flustered and speechless and just yells out, I love Psycho, as his opening line. And Carlos is usually like the dude that is flirting with everyone in the room. He even says that later in the episode, like, I don't know what's wrong with me. And it's just very, very cute seeing him completely flustered throughout this.
He shuts down. We've never seen him like this before.
Back at the house, Tracy and Mary are catching up. Mary kind of fills her in on Samuel, tells her that her mom is not really around very much. And Tracy's like, oh, they split up again? And like, again? Apparently they split up a long time ago. Like, Mary doesn't have quite the idea of her full relationship of her parents. And then Mary asks, Tracy asks, is like, are you only staying around for, you know, the monsters for this one last case? Or is it, and they look outside and like, you know, John Winchester is just doing muscle poses outside. Yeah,
John Winchester's just red faced, steam coming out of his ears, flexing.
Just glistening. Like, he's oiled himself up for some reason and he's in like some jeans, like some cut off jeans. You know what I'm talking about? Like a camp counselor that you want to just absolutely be counseled by. And he's just like, just ripped up outside. But Mary's like, no, I don't really have a lot for that right now. I'm not that into it. And she asks Tracy if she has any regrets. And Tracy talks about all of the things that she has done in the last 10 years.
Yeah. Traveling. She's like, no, my life is fucking sick.
Yeah. Have you seen this house? Like, all I do is just hang out at this house and do stuff. Like, it's great. She says her only regret is not getting out sooner.
Yes. And back over to Carlos and Lata. Carlos, he's shut down now. He can't speak in front of this hunk named Anton. He can't do it. But Anton, thankfully, has found some lore on their monster. A Sakuyant, I think is how they pronounce that word. Mm-hmm. It's basically a vampire from the Caribbean.
A vampire witch from the Caribbean.
Vampire witch from like this. I'm really impressed with some of the really cool pulls that they've done for this. And I know it's because they're digging deep for things where the Akrita are luring in these monsters from all over. And I actually, that's one aspect of the Winchesters that I really, really like. And even when we see this vampire witch, we you know, it has an interesting look to it. You know, it's they go full on with the makeup and the monster design. And I really, really appreciate that.
And there's a clever twist to this, which I think we'll get to in a minute, but I think the twist of it on this is really interesting as well. They report back to John and Mary that this is a Sukuyon or whatever, and Tracy is just shocked. She's like, that's impossible, and John just starts like mansplaining the Akrita to her, and she's like, no, not because of that. That was actually, the Sukuyon was actually the last case that we ever did. Like, her, Darla, a guy named Mac, and a guy named Rob, were hunting a group of them, and they killed three of the four. And then one of the members of the team, Mac, went to chase the Sukuyon, and then the cave fell in, and presumably killing Mac and the witch vampire, or vampire witch, whichever one you prefer. And just then, before anybody can like process that, the vampire witch ghost blasts in the door. Uses a fucking flamethrower from her hand to
big witch swinging. She kicks that fucking door in like it's nobody's business.
Huge witch energy. And John hits it with the fire extinguisher. Mary joins in. They eventually like kind of chase it away. And of course, John's got the taste of blood in his mouth, so he's like, "I'm gonna go after this." Mary's calling after him, "Don't do this." But, you know, manages to grab her machete and chase John outside. Meanwhile, John is on the ground, and this vampire witch is just clawing at his shoulder, just like just digging in deep. Luckily, Mary comes over and then chops the thing's arm off, causing it to run away.
Damn. God damn.
Fun fight. I like this a lot. And we go right back to the stew where Carlos is sewing John up, and you could tell John is just heated about this whole thing. Like he's very snappy, mainly because Carlos can't pay attention anytime someone brings Anton up, so he kind of messes up the stitching a little bit. But also just in general, like wants to get back out there and start fighting things.
Yeah, he's over this. He's over his deep shoulder wound that he sustained from a Caribbean vampire witch.
God, I wish it could be me. Tracy kind of has a theory that Rob, unsettled that Mac's body hadn't been burned, had talked to them about going back to wherever they were, to this cave-in, and retrieving Mac's body to be, you know, burned on a hunter's pyre to give him, to be laid to rest. There's a lot of, like, and this is the part that I don't like about it, like, there's a lot of, like, serious talk, like, we need to do it, but, like, it's a lot of capital letters parts of this, which I don't really like. But she's like, that's probably how this thing got out, is when he, and Rob was never heard from again, so, you know, we just all assumed he died. And I'm like, wow, you guys are shit friends. You guys are absolutely
Rob
shit
wasn't
friends.
Heard from again, but we don't have cell phones yet.
Yeah, so there's
everyone
no way to
was
know.
Like, what is that?
And of course, John immediately is like, let's get every weapon we've got, go into a car, and then drive towards it and kill it. And Barry's like, hey, this thing almost killed, like, two veteran hunters and has almost killed you. Like, you should... we should just chill out. Like, Lata brought Anton back so that we can actually, like,
and Anton
look at
brought
this
cupcakes
thing.
And
Anton brought cupcakes, and I know you're on a low carb thing. I can see your protests right now, but I guarantee you these are vegan glucose free cupcakes. They're gonna be delicious. You're gonna love them.
Listen, John, and you know what, you're gonna feel better.
You're gonna feel a little better. Carlos is like absolutely losing it when he's, Anton is here, and he just looks at Tracy and is like, I don't know what's wrong with me, I can't talk to him, I flirt with everybody.
I like that the B plot of this is just that.
Yeah, there's no like weird monster thing. It's just, I mean, I guess like Lata's thing could be the B plot.
Yeah,
but
we're dealing with a couple of character issues, but I just sort of thought that this was, I don't know. They do a lot of fun stuff with Carlos. He's, without ever really making him like the butt of the joke or just the comic relief or anything. But he always surprises me.
What's
this for? John goes to work the bag outside.
Yeah, he runs outside.
Oh no, Lata and Anton are starting to work on or do the autopsy on the monster arm that they cut off.
Right? I love the fact that they have little lab coats on for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, it's very
where
cute.
They even get those?
Where did they get the lab coats and the man of hunters, Jesus Christ, man of lit of letters barn.
There we go.
They can't get into the arm, which I thought was going to be pretty important, but they just instead use a bone saw and they open it up and out comes some weird goo. Which, did you pick up on what this was immediately, or did you
had no idea what it was, and I guess that should have been pretty obvious that it was ectoplasm. I do know ectoplasm, you know?
Yeah.
But it's been a while. It's been a while.
You're pretty ectopositive in your life, I think.
I'm ectopositive,
Yeah.
You could say that about me.
Mary goes outside and finds John hitting the punching bag, and she basically is like, hey, can we talk?
John, why are you working the bag? Are you making those noises?
And he is going after it,
like,
man.
I know you do that when you punch, but like, also stop.
And they have a kind of a huge fight. Like, I don't think that we've seen them really have a disagreement of this magnitude, and it's really one-sided. Like, I feel like it's pretty obvious that John is in the wrong here. Mary is asking him to talk, saying like, hey, maybe we've been hunting nonstop since you got back, maybe we need a little break. And he's like, are you gonna bench me, coach? And she says, no, John, I'm not, because this isn't the big game, this is life or death. Like, you need to talk to me, you can't just be out here acting like this. She even says, like, I let you walk around in my head, so just talk to me. And so finally he breaks, and he almost verbally attacks her, saying like, you know, I'm not going to be the one to wrap you in that white sheet and put you on the pyre. You're going to get out of hunting alive, and I'm going to make sure of it. I don't want to have to do that. And, you know, and she's like, this is not about me. Like, you can't use me.
Try first base first, okay? Yeah, maybe. You know, let's start with holding hands before you decide you're going to dedicate your life to me, all right?
This would be an amazing time for her to drop that she has a boyfriend. Just, like, out of nowhere. Like, I don't
By
know.
By the way, John.
I have a boyfriend.
I'm seeing someone.
You know how, I guess, like, OnlyFans dudes or Twitch dudes get real upset when they find out the streamer or the OnlyFans girl is, it's like, oh, I got married this week. And they're like, oh, you're cheating on us? Like, I feel like John would be like, oh my God, I can't believe you're cheating on me. And he's just like,
all this for a girl that you see on weekends when you, you know, in between jobs, when you're hunting weird monsters,
yeah,
you know?
Man. And he kind of yells at her, I don't need you or my mom psychoanalyzing me. And she says, I don't need you using me as an excuse for all of your issues. Yeah. And Lada walks into the middle of this. Because Lada has some interesting news. John says he's going to need a minute, though. He's going to need to take some time. So Mary, Carlos, Tracy, and Lata all go down to the lab, and we learn that the vampire witch from the Caribbean is also a vampire witch Ghost.
Yeah, which first I was like, wow, that's fucking dope as hell. And then I was like, wait, a vampire can't be a vengeful spirit because a vampire's soul would go straight to purgatory when it died. This doesn't make any sense with the lore. Actually, it's not the ghost of a vampire, which, the lore aside, I gotta admit, I perked up. You tell me we got a ghost of a vampire. Now, I know it doesn't make sense, but I was here for it.
Vampire ghost? Fuck yeah, dude. Let's go.
Not only is it a ghost, not only is it a witch, but it's also a vampire.
Oh, perfect. It turns out that Tracy, because after hearing this news, Tracy starts freaking out, and it turns out that there's more information that she had not told the gang. Namely, that the rest
that
of the team...
there was C4 involved.
...killed this Mac dude on purpose. And everybody is like, what? Of course, we go to a commercial break, come right back. And then Tracy says, yeah, her and Darla were the Lennon and McCartney of the group. And they basically brought all these other two dudes in. Mac was a dude who, like, had some demons. He had some anger issues, but they
were... He had a dark soul.
He had a dark soul.
In her own words.
He had a dark soul. I can't believe I missed the dark... Did she actually say that?
She says, he was a dark soul.
Oh, that is hilarious. I can't believe I missed that line. What the hell? I've seen this episode twice, and neither time picked up on that.
She says the word dark and soul. Basically... He was doing the Sam Winchester thing. You know, he was reacting to his trauma by going down a path of dark magic, a little bit different than Sam, but he was going dark side. And his family, his Hunter family, instead of finding a way to get through to him the way that Dean did for Sam, they decided to drop a cave on him. They decided, you know, he was getting paranoid. He was attacking other people, which we've seen Sam Winchester fucking do to Dean. He went through all of those things, but instead of being there and supporting him, finding a way through it on the other end, they dropped a fucking cave on him. It was easier to kill him than it was to make him better.
And I find this, just from a morality point of view, fascinating, like from all different sides. So now we have a guy, this Mac dude, who was a hunter, that's already, like Dean Winchester told us at the beginning of the episode, is already in this ethical quandary of, you know, what is right and wrong in the terms of saving people and hunting things. He is using dark magic, and he is becoming more angry, more aggressive because of his past. He's not willing to confront his issues, so he, in fact, is becoming a monster. And then his family, his found family, his friends, turn on him, and instead of giving him the help that he needed, they kill him. They do this monstrous act, right? So they are not them themselves monsters, but they have acted in a monstrous way, and it's just... Mm. And all of our gang is just horrified about this, right? Yeah. Like, everybody is kind of...
I mean, to put it, it's majorly uncool.
It's majorly... I mean, if you wanted to put, like, a technical term on it... Chris, I don't know why you go to the...
To boil it down.
The medical terms every single time. I just... you know what I'm saying? Like, can maybe just keep it casual language.
It's, you know, my medical background, it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
This is pretty uncool.
What are those, like, volumes of medicine that people... Or whatever? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And, you know, so this continues, and Tracy eventually says, we had no choice. We had to do it. And Lotta says, violence is always a choice.
Damn.
Which is also a really, really good line. Lotta's kind of killing
line.
It this episode.
She's dropping heat.
I don't know about you, but it's a hard call between Carlos and Lotta of who is my favorite character in this show. And it's right now it's leaning towards Lotta.
Dude, I'm waiting. Yeah, I've been waiting for Lotta to go dark side or something. Because
we know about her parents. Yeah, we learned a little bit about her. So
because I was hoping that she has some dark secret, but more it's just like a tragic past. Well, we'll see.
Carlos points out the similarities between Mac and John and how much that kind of disturbs him. He makes a Ghost of Christmas Past joke. And then Mary realizes, oh, wait, John said he was only going to be a couple of minutes, and it's been 45 minutes that we've been yelling at Tracy for doing this horrible thing.
Yeah, we've been really laying into her.
Where is John? And John has taken it upon himself to go back to Tracy's barn, unarmed and wounded, and just
very normal behavior.
Just look around and, like, not have a plan.
Yeah, I just worked that bag for a few minutes. I'm ready to go toe-to-toe with the guy. But you got to imagine, it's the '70s, right? Where like guys just think that they can like, hey, listen, sorry, like they can kind of pull that attitude and like punch their way out of anything. Yeah. Cause guys were definitely being dudes. Uh-huh. But when you say guys were being dudes in the present tense, that's a compliment. When you say guys were being dudes in the '70s, I'm sorry, but that's not a compliment.
Have you seen the trend on TikTok of women asking the men in their life if they think that they can land a plane in an emergency situation?
Yes, I have, oddly enough.
And like every single dude is like, I mean, I've not had training, but I mean, probably. Like every single dude assumes they can. And that is huge John Winchester walking into the barn that a vampire witch ghost is currently haunting, unarmed and in a fucking white long sleeve V-neck
shirt. I'm just saying, if I had instructions.
I'm just saying, if I had like a manual, I could probably do it.
I could maybe not die. Okay,
how I'm hard not going to say. You aim for the ground, you pull up at the end. I don't know. It's easy.
If I could direct Lincoln, his little parrot, sale, maybe I can figure out.
I could probably
do that.
That's
all I'm saying.
Honestly, the times that I have fucked up Lincoln his little parasail probably tells me I need to stay the hell away from
I'm
the
not
cockpit.
Saying I want to be given that chance. I'm just saying, given the chance, don't count me out. That's all I'm saying.
You know how when you get famous enough, you get like an honorary doctorate for like a school or whatever? Like, I want somebody to give me an honorary pilot's license.
An honorary pilot's license. Yeah. That's
I want to be able to be like, oh yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't do any of the work involved, but I am legally allowed to call myself a pilot on this plane.
Dude, Captain, so Captain Greer.
Captain Greer, are you kidding me?
Zero hours logged.
The rest of the crew arrive at the barn.
Carlos is a pilot.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. John walks in and is immediately attacked by the vampire ghost witch.
Oh, yeah, sure. He tried to swing on her.
Yeah.
No luck.
No luck. The vampire ghost witch then expels the possession smoke, and the possession smoke goes into John Winchester's mouth. So now John is currently possessed. The vampire witch just falls over and just turns to dust. What a bummer.
Yeah. So it was just the corpse of a very cool vampire witch possessed by Max Vengeful Spirit. We knew that. That is actually kind of cool, though. That's like, I don't know if that would work out if Supernatural would have some lore against that. But if Bobby can possess an old flask, then, you know, this angry dude can possess a vampire witch.
Exactly. Yeah. The group arrive. Determined,
and they see John kind of like posing, and they're like, okay, that's
this is John.
This is bad.
This is this is just what John does. Like normally he's like greased up, and Lana's like, excuse me.
But Tracy's
me?
Like, no. I'll know that. I know that stance anywhere. That's Mac. That's the guy we dropped C4 on.
Mac immediately locks them into the barn. Knocks Carlos out. Carlos is going to be out for this entire fight, which is a bummer. Mary tries to talk to John, of course, telling him to fight his way back. This never worked. It's never worked in the history of Supernatural.
Nobody
has ever clawed their way out of a possession like this. Mac tells her that John is along for the ride, and then knocks her to the ground. Tracy aims her shotgun at John, but he just kind of grabs it and throws it away. Also, like, if you shoot John at this point, like,
straight up gonna kill that boy.
He grabs Tracy's neck and holds her against the wall, strangling her. We get a pretty long fight scene. This is really great. Mary tackles him to the ground, and Mac like picks up a pan from somewhere and just smacks Mary across the face with the pan. And the camera for a split second goes to Lotta as she's like kneeling down over Carlos's unconscious body. And she just looks around and she just has this look of like, what the fuck? A pan? Yeah. Which is like, it's just a perfect.
He just like Three Stooges her? Like, what just happened?
It's a once, like, a, I mean, not, maybe not even a second and a half of visual detail that just made me fucking cry out in laughter. I loved it so much.
That's good stuff.
But Mac and Mary square off again. He knocks her out, but she's not out all the way. So she jumps on his back, starts trying to finger his wound, or worry his wound, if you would prefer.
Yep. That wound is being worried, if you ask me.
But it doesn't work. Doesn't hurt him. And he says, all I've ever known are clenched fists. Yeah. And then he holds Mary up against the wall using his telekinetic powers. And Tracy aims the shotgun at him. And Lotta, the only person in the room that can really do anything, and not wanting to break her vow as a pacifist, I guess it's a vow, or break her she doesn't want to fight, she doesn't want to hit anybody, right? Yeah. She does the unthinkable and stands in between Tracy and Mac, and as everybody is like, that's no, you don't want to do that, she turns around and begins to talk to Mac and tells him the story of her father, who when their country went to war, when she was a kid, went to war, fought for his country, came back a changed man. He brought back anger, and that anger turned to violence. It made her feel hopeless and powerless. And then she began to feel angry, and she let that anger grow in spite of her thinking that that was bad.
Yeah.
And that anger grew to the point that it caused her to hurt someone. And she tells him, like, everything is a choice. Peace is has to be chosen. Mm-hmm. And so she eventually was able to let go of that because she hurt someone. Like, she realizes the consequences of the actions that she had. And as she says, peace has to be chosen, Max says, I chose my team and they abandoned me. And he looks at Tracy, and with a surprisingly kind of heartbreaking line here, why did you give up on me?
Damn.
I mean,
damn.
I love this Winchester show so much sometimes because they can wring a lot of emotional detail out of, like, a ghost guy possessing John Winchester, which, like, is a mm-hmm. classic supernatural trope. We talked about this on the very first episode of Monster of the Week, of, like, the boys getting possessed and telling their true feelings. And it's that, but it's also different, and it's really, really good.
And it's another very firm reminder to everyone in the room that if they give up on John, this could be him.
Absolutely. Yeah, the parallels are really, really striking, right? Like, you immediately realize, like, oh, this could be Mac. And eventually, Mac, I think Lada says that you can still break the cycle. Tracy apologizes. It doesn't feel like a really good apology to me, to be honest with you. Yeah. But eventually,
you know, Tracy gets off the hook way too fucking easy. She's living a dope life.
She has a great house, like, presumably paid for this somehow. Like, it looks great. Yeah. Like, yeah. Eventually, Mac lets Mary fall, stabs the knife into the ground, and then he releases John's body. He flees into his soul just goes into the air. John collapses. Mary quickly verifies that he's alive. And Carlos, who has now woken up and has watched this whole thing, looks over at Lada, and you could just tell he's beaming. He's just like, you did it. I'm so proud of you. You did it. They load up a sleeping John in the van, which it took all four of them to do that, right, Chris? Like, I mean, all four of them were carrying that beef stick into the back of the van.
Yeah, that was a group effort. We all had to hold L2 to get that one moving.
Do you like, this is a complete aside, on Final Fantasy 16, when you have to open a heavy door, that trigger on the PlayStation, like, it's really, like, hard.
I wish that there wasn't as much of a pause before you do it, but I do like it,
yeah,
I'll admit.
I like that. I like that. Well, it just makes it hard to pull. Like, that's fun. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
It's time to kind of catch up, even though we have a lot of time left in the episodes for some reason.
There's so much time left in the episode.
But we have to catch up. So Tracy thanks Mary. Mary says that she understands what they did. And this is when...
Yeah, sorry about that super fucked up thing I did. Well,
see you later. And this, we talked about this at the very beginning of this episode. Tracy says that she, to make up for what she did, she realizes, like, she did some bad stuff and she hasn't been dealing with it directly. So she's gonna solve this werewolf case. And Mary says, like, oh, so you're just back to hunting. Is that the lesson that you can never escape? And she says, no, when you finally decide to get out, you're going to do it the right way. Like, you have to deal with the decisions you made, though. Like, you, that's always going to be.
Don't get out of the life by dropping a cave on your problems.
Yeah. Maybe,
you know, don't just.
Maybe don't kill a guy in cold blood. Yeah. Maybe you shouldn't do that.
Maybe, you know, don't cross that line in order to leave the past behind. You have to do it the right way. So for Mary, the right way is stopping the Akrita threat and finding her dad. Those are the two things that she's focused on, like she said earlier. And that's the right way for her is settling that unfinished business and bringing a close to the thing that she's currently on. She doesn't need to go off after every vampire and werewolf that shows up. Once she has settled the score where she's at, then she's ready to move on.
It's actually three things. It's deal with the Akrita threat, find her dad, and rig up that motorcycle John gave her to have, like, a machete holder on the side.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Those are the three things that she's going to need to do before she
can. It's that third one is not as easy as you'd think.
It's a long machete. And it's not.
It's a long machete. And if that comes loose on the highway, you're in trouble.
It's just like losing a ladder. Like, they're going to come find you about it.
They're going to find you.
They drive off, and we go back to the lab where Carlos and Lata are burning this arm of the monster.
Yeah, whatever. Just toss it in there.
Carlos is feeling weird about it because Anton touched it. But then
he's deep in his feelings on this one. He's all kinds of fucked up.
He actually has tears in his eyes when he tells Lata that you know, hey, what you did yesterday was absolutely amazing. And if it was any of us here, we would have killed Mac, but you decided,
definitely would have killed John.
You decided to help him. You helped him. And that's yeah. what needed to happen. And it's incredible. Like, that just kind of underlines her usefulness to the gang, right? Mm-hmm. To the team. And I really like this idea of a pacifist hunter. It's very appealing yeah. to me. And again, something like you were talking about, that like all of these like hunting things have to be codified, and like they're all the same, and they have to, you know, we all have to do everything the same way. Like, here's an example of a totally different style of hunter, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I wish that there was more of this, where, because, you know, Mary, Carlos, eventually John, they're all the same. Bobby, Sam, Dean, they're all the same. They all come, of course, from the same history. But lots of being different is actually a really good answer to that. And it's a reminder that there probably are a lot of other interesting angles to this in this world, just because we're constantly exposed to the same legacy of a hunter, because indeed it is still the same family. But it is nice to be reminded of other aspects of it.
Yeah.
It softens my complaints a little.
As they're walking out, Lotta reveals that she has a note from Anton.
Which, yeah, I don't know how Anton was smitten with Carlos. I guess Lotta was probably talking a big game.
Yeah. But
because Carlos like shuts down. I don't care how charming and handsome you are. That boy shut down.
I don't know, man. Like, Carlos is handsome enough that you'd probably just be like, I mean, yeah, if he's interested, sure, why not?
Yeah,
let's see what happens.
In his own way, he said not flirting was a form of flirting in itself.
Yeah. The note says dinner tomorrow. Carlos is extremely excited. Dinner tomorrow? Question mark. Meanwhile, John wakes up. Mary has been waiting on him, has a glass of water, waiting, and he immediately says, you know, hey, you know, I remember our fight. And she goes, I know that wasn't you. And he goes, no, not the fight in the barn where I
don't mean the fight in the barn where I beat the fucking shit out of you.
I mean that fight in the barn where I whooped your ass. Like, I threw you into a thing. Like, this is, do you remember when the trailer for this came out and they did like the funny, like, John punching Mary thing?
Yeah, it's too much.
And I, it's just maybe a little too much, but anyway. No, he says that she was
no,
right.
No, I remember hitting you in the face with a pan, and I'm not talking about that.
No, we're not revisiting that right now. He says, no, I have dealt with anger. I've wrestled with anger my entire life, and I thought I'd put it to bed. But the what he had to do 2 or 3 episodes ago, I can't remember the name of the character off the top of my head, but like
when he fought Mars.
Yes.
Something.
Mars Nettle?
Mars Volta.
Definitely Mars Volta. It brought it all back up, right? And he hasn't been able to really deal with any of that. It wasn't what he was expecting. And he's been using Mary and hunting as an excuse to avoid all of his problems. And now, with Mac's example fresh and foremost in his mind, he says, like, I can't end up like Mac. And Mary's like, you're not going to. Like, I want to get out of hunting, but it's not going to be at your expense. That's not your responsibility. Like, you can't be left behind. You mean too much for me.
And I have to say again, I do have a boyfriend.
I do. Just need to mention very clearly, I do have a boyfriend that I'm currently making out with when you're not around. So just so you know, because this is a classic kiss scene, right? Like, I kind of expected them to kiss at this moment. So,
but no, I mean, these are important building blocks for them to establish. And I think if they just let these two kind of like fall in love, deal with all these problems later, or just maybe not deal with them, then that would be very problematic, because people already have a lot of problems with the John Mary relationship, or with John in general. So I think that they're doing a good job of creating a relationship built on trust, built on communication, where we are going to work together to work through your issues, our different issues and our collective issues, before we decide that we're going to, you know, get together romantically. At least that's how it seems like this is going. And I think that that's good, where she is going to be sort of the salve for his wounds. But once she's gone, then all those wounds, they come back out. So maybe, I guess the moral is here that we didn't fully address them, or that addressing them is an everyday activity. It's something that, you know, it doesn't just happen once you had your character development and you're not angry anymore. This is a lifelong uphill walk that we're gonna go on together. And when John loses Mary, that's when, you know, things fall apart for him.
And they're going to underline this again, because after this scene, we go back over to Lotta, who's meditating, much like she did in the opening scene. And she's interrupted again, this time by John, who obviously wants to thank her for what she did. and then kind of very shyly, shyly, is that a word? Shyly has to be a word.
Yeah.
In a very shy fashion, ask, like, hey, you talked about being able to deal with your anger. Can you teach me how to do that? And it's just, it's a really weird moment because this is nothing like the John Winchester that we know and despise from the main series. Yeah. It's not. It's just not the same character. Like, you just can't imagine Jeffrey Dean Morgan as a learning how to meditate from Lada. Like, I just, there just doesn't seem like that's possible to me. But he just jumps into it. They sit down. She has to show him how to, like, sit and hold his hands. She begins, like, repeating her mantra. He joins her in repeating the mantra, and it looks like things are going to kind of be good. And then we get more Dean Winchester narration where he says, hunting is not for everyone. It's not easy, but then again, the righteous things never are, which is a really strange way to almost end this episode. We've got one more little line, but this is, hunting is not for everyone is a really weird way to end an episode where, like, it's very clear that anybody can get into it, and it's really hard to get out of. And, like, also Lata can do it even though she's a pacifist. Like, it's a weird thing to go to. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, I am very glad that John Winchester's going to therapy. That's a thing that I think everybody has asked for since
maybe he's going to meditation. Yes. You know?
Well, I mean, it's close.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Did he say that he's going with Carlos?
He did not.
Did I just completely block that out of my brain?
He did not say that. No.
Yeah, but anyway, we're not done just yet.
Nope. They are interrupted again. Carlos and Mary come bursting in. Carlos has some intel. They have found the location of the radio tower that the Akrita is using to attract the monsters. And that's it.
That's it. Now we're done.
Now we are done with the episode. And it was a good one. I think this was a just phenomenal episode. It's really disappointing to me that we don't have more of this, because I want more of this. Like, this is a really good time.
Yeah. I hope they end the season in a good place, because I'm sure there's going to be things left open. But I hope that we at least have enough time to address some of what's going on here. Yeah, bummer that, you know, it was canceled. But
I will
it's
say,
been good.
I will say, just to set your expectations, like, this does not end on a cliffhanger that never gets resolved. Like, I feel like if, I don't know if they knew, or maybe they just,
I feel like with a season one, you have to.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if we only get one, we need to, you know, at least tell the story and then leave it open for possibilities.
I'm glad they didn't end with, like, the Impala getting hit by a truck, right? Like, that doesn't happen.
Could you imagine?
Can you imagine how that would have worked out? Yeah. But yeah, I was with the finale of the show, if it remains the finale forever, like, I was like, yeah, okay. Like, I feel like they felt like this might get canceled, and, like, we might not have another shot at this. Yeah. So let's swing for it. But, like, we're also going to wrap up some of the stuff we've been doing. So, thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for coming back with us to the Monster of the Week feed. We really, really appreciate it. If you want to write in about your feelings on the podcast or about the Winchesters in general, you can do so at monsteroftheweekpodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter at MOTWcast. You can leave ratings and reviews of the show. That would help. You can tell your friends about it. That also helps. We also have a Patreon at patreon.com/monsteroftheweek. And until next time, Chris, we're just going to wait, because the next episode preview is It All Adds Up.
All right. I'll take your word for it.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye. Hello.
Good morning.
Okay, it's working now. I was in here a second ago, but it didn't do anything.
Oh, well, that's a bummer. I'm very Eeyore today, Chris.
I feel like I kind of am too. I ate a burger at like 11:30 a.m. this morning, and I feel like it just fucked up my whole day. I've been so, like, sluggish ever since.
I went to the doctor for my normal little checkup, and my doctor said the F word at one point, which is not, I mean, it wasn't like towards me or anything, but it's just like when you can get your doctor to say the F word in front of you.
Yeah. And did he like look at your like results and go, fuck?
So I have like, this is maybe something I probably shouldn't share to the public, but some I have some levels that are a little higher
sure,
than they should be,
sure.
Let's say. And she was saying one of the things to do is, of course, like literally that will that is the cure-all that every single doctor would tell you is just go on a diet.
Yeah, like, diet and exercise every time.
You're 42 years old. Don't eat that many carbs. Yeah. And she was saying about herself, she's like, you know, one day when I decided to go into a low-carb diet, I was at Sonic, and I was eating a medium ice cream, and I was just hated it because it was so much ice cream. Like, a medium is just so, and I just hated myself. I hated the entire thing I was eating. I hated myself for eating it. And I was like, you're a fucking doctor. How dare yeah. you just give advice, tell people how to live their lives, and you can't even stop eating this ice cream. And I was like, Jesus, doctor, you just said the F word.
God damn, doc. If you can't keep it together, how am I supposed to keep it together?
Honestly, my day has been on a fucking grease slide since then, to be honest with you. Like, I am just Man. Every single thing. And then I get in the car, and Spotify kicks on automatically, and I'm listening to the Boy Genius EP, and it's mm-hmm. just... And I don't know what it is about that chick. I think it's Julian who's singing. I have trouble distinguishing the three of their voices sometimes. But I think it's Julian that says, I just want to be up in space, me and my dog, and an impossible view. And
I think that one's Phoebe.
Is that Phoebe?
That one's Phoebe's, yeah. But that's a good one. That's my favorite one on that.
That line alone. I know it's called, mm-hmm. like, me and my dog or whatever, but, like, that line, I don't know. It just breaks me. It's broken me. Like, yeah. I listened to it six times
today. Sometimes you need to be broken, though. Sometimes it's just, you need to snap. You got to feel like Eeyore for a couple days, and then you go, you know, you wipe away the tears, and you're like, all right, I'm good. I'm back.
Feel like I've been Eeyore right. for like a year. I feel like yeah. I've been Eeyore for a long time now, and I'm kind of tired of it.
I should have maybe noticed a few more red flags when you say you're listening to Boy Genius. I say it, and it's just, you know, this is just another Tuesday. That's
Chris.
My standard.
Yeah.
But I should have taken notice. You know, I got too excited, and I was like, oh, he's coming over to my side. When really I should say, hey, brother, what's bringing you over to my side?
What's going on?
We need to talk about this.
Friends let friends listen to Boy Genius, but make sure they're yeah. okay first before they do
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I think that's, we got to check in. You know, hey, don't let your doctor get you down. Don't let eating a cheeseburger at 11:30 a.m. get you down.
Yeah, we could do better than that, I guess.
Yeah. I was just thinking as I'm, you know, I'm finishing up the Winchesters, and I'm like, man, I chugged two glasses of water before hopping on the mic.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, what's going on with me? And I'm like, it's that fucking cheeseburger I ate this morning.
I also think it's because it's 100,000 degrees outside.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's not quite. It's in the 70s here, which is pretty nice, but the humidity is out of control.
Yeah, we're in. It's like the hottest it's ever been here, basically. Like, and wow. I can't wait till next year when they say that again. Like, I'm just, every year is going to be, oh, this
every
is
year,
the hottest
yeah.
year we've ever had, and I'm just going to be like, yep, that's funny how that
yeah.
works.
I know
out.
in well, lots of places have lost power. My uncle is here from Arkansas. And his daughter, my cousin, she just lost power for like 3 days. So just, you know, no AC. That would kill. I think it would kill me. It would kill lesser men. And I am, in fact, a lesser man.
Yeah. Former guest of the show, Shelby. She was without power.
Oh, down in Texas, right?
Yeah. For like 4 or 5 days or something. And it like wasn't like that's like hurricane level. Like, I was without power for 4 days when a hurricane devastated Southwest yeah. Louisiana. It's ridiculous to me that we can't get our yeah. shit together to provide power for people.
And all I'm saying, I don't know what everybody's situation is like. If I don't got AC, you better not expect me to go to work. That's
right?
The least you could do.
Dude, if it's hot outside, I don't want to go to work. If it's cold outside, I don't want to go to
work. I
work
indoors in an office.
Yeah.
But.
Well, I mostly work. I'm mostly in my car, so yeah. I just drive around and talk to people.
Crank the AC.
I did a couple of summers back. We were installing this antenna on a tower, and I didn't have to do any work, but I was just there, like supervising, basically.
Yeah.
Not even supervising. Like, I was just there to make sure things were going right. And I couldn't park close to the place we were installing it. And for whatever reason, I felt like I needed to be over there. But it was so hot, I thought I was going to pass out. Like, I literally finally was just like, hey guys, I'll be right back. And went and sat in my car with the air conditioner yeah. running for like 20 minutes. Because it was that
fucking
hot.
Meanwhile, everybody else is working out in the sun.
Can't imagine being that hot. How's Final Fantasy 16 going, Chris?
Oh, brother. I have... I was just doing a little bit of research. I beat... Tears of the Kingdom on May 28th,
okay,
which was 16 days after it released.
Are so you okay?
In 16 days, I played 60 hours of that video game, which I think that's quite a lot. In the, I think, 4 days since Final Fantasy 16 came out, I've played 40 hours. It's 5 days, whatever it is.
That's a lot, Chris. That's a lot.
I'm putting those numbers together in real time. We're having this conversation in real time. That's getting me fucked up. That's too much time.
Well, you took like we should say, like you took some vacation for this.
I took off
like,
5 days from work to play Final Fantasy.
Well, you took, presumably to relax and enjoy yourself.
To
and,
relax.
Around
while
the,
being able to play it.
While
yeah.
being able to play Final Fantasy 16. Yeah. Like, yeah. I think that's fine, right? Like, that's...
I would... Because if I'm not going anywhere... Then I want to just take my vacations and to do nothing, which is most of the time that's what I do. And it coincided with Jess, like the school year finished, so she's got time off now. But yeah, typically if I'm gonna take some time off, might as well take it off around the release of a video game.
Yeah.
So that with that extra free time, I get something fun to play. Now I've done other stuff, but I think I started putting a little pressure on myself. I was like, let's finish this before I go back to work. Now, at the time of this recording, I go back to work tomorrow. I'm 40 hours in, which is diabolical. My PlayStation 5 says that I am 70% of the way through. So that's... I got a lot of time left.
So,
it's because I've done every single side quest, every hunt, every additional thing that you can do. I have done it so far.
Because I was going to ask, because I think that's like... That metric is like 70%. Of like finishing all of the trophies or whatever, right? Like,
oh, okay, maybe that's what it is. I would like to think I'm getting near the end. I'd be pretty excited if I was, because I really want to know what happens. I'm really invested in the story, but I'm still doing everything. Yesterday I almost shifted. I was like, I'm gonna stop doing side quests, but at this point I've done them all so far, like I might as well just see it through to the end and not rush and just continue playing the game out the way I want to play it. The side quests at the beginning of that game are so boring and feel so pointless.
Hey.
They finally start opening up and making sense. Like, I've done 4 requests for this random person, and now this person later in the game is having this whole story arc because I have this working relationship with this person, and now I get to go through this whole arc. I get a good reward at the end of it. There's going to be some gameplay changes or whatever. Do I think it should be that way? Do I think it should take that much effort? No. But there is, it does open up a little bit more. They start making them worth your while towards the end, or the second half, I guess.
I've started the game as well. I am not 40 hours into it.
Yeah.
I am. I don't know where. Like, I just went back to like a big event happens in the opening chapter of that game, and I just like returned there for the first time.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Very, very early on. But I was playing it the same way you are, where like, oh, there's 2 side quests. I'm doing the side quest before we focus on the main mission.
Mm-hmm.
And the first side quest I did was for the guy that runs the local like eatery at your hangout.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, I've got some food here, and I need you to deliver it for me.
Yeah, I couldn't fucking believe it.
And I was like, okay. And like, I just kind of expected, like, okay, there's going to be a twist to this. And then, like, accepted the quest, and, like, 3 markers show up on the map, and you're like, okay. And one of them is 6 feet away from you. So, like, literally this bartender could just, like, hey, here's your food, and, like just lean it over the bar to this guy. Instead, you walk it over and have a conversation about something. I don't even remember what. But, like, I was literally, like, a waiter. And then I went out, did some missions, came back to the hangout, and the guy was like, I got 3 more meals. Can you help me out? And I'm like, like, what? This is. Do you not have a guy that she just does this?
Bro, I'm Clive.
My name is Clive.
Have you seen how big my sword is?
I have the power of the Phoenix. Are you fucking kidding me?
Fucking chill, dog.
What is your damage, my man? And then the second one I did was I need 3 pieces of wood. And it was just like, I just went from one side of the hangout to
the
other side.
It's the most basic like side quest you could possibly do in a video game. They're very, especially those early ones, are very much like the MMO side quests. Like, yeah, we get it, you guys make an MMO, but that ain't what this is.
That's not what this is supposed to be. I want to talk, speaking of MMOs, can I tell you about Diablo 4 for a little bit?
I might have muted myself, but hit me.
You did, because you just didn't respond to me whatsoever. So. And what's funny is you probably didn't mute your recording, so in the recording, this is going to sound normal, and they're going to be like, why is Jeremy totally talking normal about this? So Diablo 4 came out around the same time Tears of the Kingdom came out.
The big D, as they call it.
The big D from Blizz. The big Blizz D. Autumn and I, as listeners of the show probably know, we have a storied history with Diablo. When we dated, we played the second. When the third one came out on consoles, we played it for thousands of hours across like three different platforms. Like, we have played a bunch of Diablo. Diablo 4 it's always online, which I hate. Like, I'm logging into the server, which sucks.
Dude, if you're asking me to log into a server, I'm already annoyed.
Dude, I'm already annoyed at this. We have been kicked out a couple of times, which is a bummer, a huge bummer anytime that happens. Yeah. And I understand, like, video games are hard, right? Like, I'm not blaming them for me getting kicked out. Like, things happen. But it's just, like, why did you make your game like this? Like, I don't, And then, you know, I go back into town, and they have crafted this, like, meticulous world that's in this fantasy setting with these varied environments, and it's filled with people. And then they're all like a part of this thing, except what I'm really looking at is the like 10 weirdos that are actual players on the map that are just zooming around on their horses. And I can't interact with them in any meaningful way. I just see like, you know, Berserker.
You just have to see them. You're forced to see them.
I have to see Sephiroth 669, you know, Barbarian level 70, like run across my screen for no reason. And I just like, it's such a weird fucking game because they like, the cutscenes are some of the coolest, like, it's all over the top Diablo stuff. Like, I feel like Diablo's storyline is ridiculous and so dumb at this point. But who cares? Like, they made a goth GF and she's taking over the world. And if the game allowed me to, I would join her instead of fighting her. But it's just, like, it takes itself so seriously that it's so fucking cartoonish on the other side. And then all of the things that they have done with the stats in this game are so fucking confusing. Like, Autumn and I, again, having a lot of experience playing these kind of games, like, kind of being excited for it, like, loaded in, and I was like, I'm going to jump in, I'm ready. And then it just fucking died constantly. Could not tell what the fuck was going on in the screen. Like, they've added so many new systems, and it just feels like it's for... And the whole appeal of Diablo, like the real thing is like end game stuff, and I get that, I do. Like, the goal is to like create a build and to continually fight with that build as the numbers get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, right? Like, that's what the game is built around. Right. But like, at some point they just left me in the fucking dust, man. Like, I literally had to go online and find, like, I found me one in Audible and like a level guide where it was like, level one, put your point here. So now, like, I'm doing that, and it's working. Like, I'm having a better time with this character. But also, I feel like I'm not even actually playing the game.
Yeah, it sucks that you have to do that. That's what I used to have to do when I played World of Warcraft back in the day. I was never able to get good at that game. I would raid with my friends, and everybody else, they had it, and I didn't have it. You have to do things in a certain order. You have to spec your character in a certain way, put your points in the right box. I just don't like that. This isn't fun. I like having some control over that kind of stuff. But when it gets, like, too granular like that, and you have to do it just the certain specific way in order to have fun, then it's not fun.
It's just not fun. And I don't know, like, it's finally, like, we're in level, well, I've restarted, so Autumn is level like 33. I think I'm at level 23 or 24 or something. So I couldn't play like the melee character. I was like, I just need to be away from these guys. And it's finally at this point, like, I feel like we're finally coming to terms with it, but it's so overwhelming. There's so many different numbers on the screen at one time. And the UI does one of the things that I hate with the UIs do, which is inconsistent placement of stuff. So, like, the couch co-op thing is perfect. Like, you can... It's pretty easy to, like, drop in and out. Like, you can manage your inventories at the same time, which is incredible. You couldn't do that in Diablo 3. It was always, like, you go get a water, you go get a cocktail, I'm going to, like, sort my shit or whatever. But... Like, if you're comparing two items with what you have equipped and, like, what a new item, right? The equipped item stats window is like a pop-up, and it will move around on the screen as you move through the items. It's not static. And I'm like, why are you doing this? Like, just make the equipped item thing stay in one place and only show... Yeah. I'm sorry.
That deserves its own spot on the screen.
I'm just so aggravated. Yeah, everything is like a tooltip pop-up. Like, it's really frustrating. And the thing is, like, I'm excited to play the game. Like, Autumn's out of town last night, so, and I don't play this game without her. So, when she comes home tonight, we'll probably play a bunch of Diablo. But I mean, it's just been such a weird time with that game. It's like, oh, we wanted to make MMO Diablo, but not like actual MMO Diablo.
Yeah, yeah. I worried that Final Fantasy 16 was actually going to be a little bit overwhelming.
Yeah.
It turned out to not be, thankfully. But at first, it just feels like they're giving you a lot of different skills. I'm also not particularly good at Devil May Cry. I like those games and I've played them all, but I'm not very good at them. So I thought, oh, we're putting that kind of combat in my Final Fantasy. I'm going to be bad at this. But I think the learning curve is just like, here's your very few basic skills, and then you're going to get a million skills down the road. None of them are necessarily better than any of the others. You just pick the ones that you like. You can level them up, make them stronger. You can undo, like, when you put your points into things, you can undo that at any time at no cost and put the points in different things and mess around. I found it to be pretty rewarding this far in, and I have now set it up in a way where, like, anytime I get attacked by a group of, like, low-level enemies, I use one attack. It's like a giant AoE. It takes everybody out. I'm good to go. So all of that stress and that worry about playing has gone away. I think people have been saying that the game is too easy, which might be true. Especially if you do all the side quests, then you're going to be overleveled all the time. But I'm happy to not be stressed out, because you play a game like Final Fantasy VIII, learning that game is a little bit stressful. Final Fantasy XII, I couldn't ever really figure it out, so I haven't played that game very much. This is pretty streamlined.
The gambit system in Final Fantasy XII was really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Like,
I think it's pretty cool, but I can't make it work.
yeah, like parsing it, like just trying to make it actually effective was always the challenge. And I bet, and you know, just like we were talking about, I bet you could go online and be like, oh yeah, you just have to do X, Y, and Z, and it was perfect. And I would be like, oh well, that was fun for somebody else to learn.
It took me literally years to figure out what was going on in Final Fantasy VIII. It's just because it uses the junction. It's so strange. And obviously, that's my favorite game, so I've got it locked in now.
Not to completely change the subject, but I learned a fact the other day, and I wanted to talk to you about it. So we've talked about the Locked Tomb series quite a bit, the books, and I know your buddy Steve is way, way into them. You know, I went through like I read all three and then immediately read them all again. Like I was really, really into it. There's a thing that happens in the third book. There's these entities, and someone was like teasing, like they were making like a Barbie movie meme for the thing, and somebody else was saying like a different kind of thing, and the guy was like, oh yeah, I have no doubt that will happen, considering that she based, I don't remember the name, but she based this entity on a boss from Final Fantasy VIII. And I was like, which one?
Hold on, yeah, I have so many things that I have so many questions. Do we have any more information on this?
This is it. This is all of the information that I have.
Wow.
So now you have to read those books and tell me which one is Final Fantasy.
Yeah. 8. Okay. Interesting. Very interesting. I'm trying to think of what that could even be. Well, I guess I don't know what the entities are. So you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And like explaining that is literally like ruining part of the discovery. Like I wouldn't want to have known that going in. So.
Oh, I have an idea. I won't say it, but I have an idea. There's some weird shit in that game. Anywho.
There is. That is.
There's totally weird shit in every Final Fantasy game. Everyone keeps saying like, oh, Final Fantasy 16 turns into Kingdom Hearts halfway through. No, it absolutely doesn't. I can confirm it absolutely doesn't. It's just doing the thing that all Final Fantasies do, where it's, you thought you were dealing with one thing. Well, now you're actually dealing with a different thing. That's it. Every fucking game does that. Every fucking game has a main evil villain. Like, that's how it is.
Mm-hmm. We should probably talk about Winchesters, but I just want to say, like, all of the combat and stuff, like, I'm real hit or miss with character action games like this, and it, like, the combat has to really, really flow for me to like it a lot, and it's very, very similar to DMC, I think. And for whatever reason, like I sometimes bounce off the DMC systems. I am fucking loving the combat in this game.
It's good shit.
Like
and it just gets better. So.
Oh man, I just like all of the skills are fun. Like I've been bouncing between a bunch of them. Doing the little leash thing when you kind of stagger them a little bit is super fun.
Oh yeah.
The double stomp, super fucking fun. Coming up with the combos, all that stuff. When you get the flying enemies, and I can do the Phoenix dash thing into the sky and like hit them three times, and then they fall down, and then I can just like do the ground slam on them, and then just immediately teleport to the sky to kill off their buddy. Fucking perfection.
Yeah.
So fun.
Yeah. That game does a really good job of giving you a lot of mobility in between attacks, which is really great. It just keeps getting better.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Winchesters.
All right.